Alrighty, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Hector Linares. I'm a program manager with the... Sorry, this is being recorded, so step again. I'm a program manager with the System Center team. I work on Virtual Machine Manager. That is the component of System Center that manages Hyper-V, storage, and networking in a virtualized private cloud. And so the topic today will be covering storage management in the context of the work that we do around SMIS. And so this is something that we've invested in over the past few years, and now we've expanded our storage view for SAN, NAS, and also Fibre Channel Fabrics. So I'll focus the front set of these slides on the SMB3 work that we've done. And if we have time, then I'll cover, you know, at a high level, what we do around block management and disaster recovery. But I want to leave this open for any kind of Q&A, any questions that you might have. Feel free to interrupt. I've got no problem with that. I do have 40 minutes now, so I'll just be a little conscious of time, so I might, you know, cut off questions and then leave them towards the end, and we can take them outside. So at a high level, I do want to start with the journey that we've been on as far as storage management and what we hear from our customers. We take a very wide source of feedback, whether it's direct face-to-face customer feedback, customer engagements through TAP or the technology adoption programs, maybe surveys, either through online SurveyMonkey, or also at conferences, we'll do a wide number of surveys. And so the feedback that we've been getting for the past few years in the context of virtualization, Hyper-V, private cloud, first thing is that customers are frustrated with the amount of time that it takes to provision storage. So we use that as one of the anchors as to why we actually invest in storage management in Virtual Machine Manager. Now, how many of you are familiar with VMM, Virtual Machine Manager? I've had a chance to use it. Okay. How many of you are familiar with OM, Operations Manager? All right, so VMM, Virtual Machine Manager, is a provisioning for a virtualized private cloud. Operations Manager is a monitoring and alerting mechanism. There's also SMA, Orchestrator for workflows and orchestration. You also have DPM for backup. So I'll be talking about this in the context primarily of VMM and also the work that we're doing with Operations Manager on managing monitoring file shares. So then we ask customers, what kind of automation do you do today in order to alleviate some of the pain points in your environment? And most customers still come back and say they don't actually have time to automate. Either there's a problem with resources; it just takes too much time to automate across many different devices, whether it's SAN or NAS, or they don't have the experience and the expertise in the group. So there's typically what we see with our customers. They're virtualization admins. They sit in the middle of network storage and compute, but there's an entire dedicated team that's just owning the storage. Another dedicated team just owning networking. And so this is really at the intersection of compute, storage, and networking. They still have to provision some storage. They still have to manage some storage, but they're not actually in charge of the devices. As we move to a converged world where maybe in the rack, you'll have storage, computer, networking, or maybe in a 4U unit, you'll be hyper-converged with all components in a small footprint. Now those virtualization admins have to become more of a generalist. And so we want to make sure that we cover those scenarios as well as far as helping them automate in that context. So once they get past provisioning and automation, once they're in runtime, once they have applications deployed into this environment, another problem that comes up is that they don't have enough context when troubleshooting around visibility. What workloads are running on what file shares? What workloads are running using what network ports? And so we want to make sure that we provide that end-to-end context that starts from the workload through the servers, through storage, all the way down to the physical infrastructure. And this gets a little bit more complicated once you start talking about IaaS and PaaS. How many of you are familiar with Azure Stack, Microsoft Azure Stack? All right. So in that environment, that's actually a self-service multi-tenant portal that allows you to provision, let's say, VMs or PaaS workloads into an environment from a tenant perspective, similar to how you would do in Azure or in AWS. In that context, VMM has really no visibility into the context of the work. From a customer perspective, it's a lot of layers to traverse in order to get end-to-end visibility. So if you combine Azure Stack with VMM, you can actually see from the top-end workload from a temp perspective all the way down to the physical infrastructure. And finally, in terms of visibility, when there's a problem in the infrastructure, assessing the impact up to the applications is also a problem. So if I need to take down a particular server, or I need to, let's say, take a share offline, we want to make sure we give the customer the upwards impact of a share going down and all of the applications that are running on top of that. So the way we roll out features now, it's either through an update rollup. So every 3 months we get new updates, we release new patches, either a vNext product. I know you guys are all working on Windows Server 2016, and so we'll have a System Center 2016 that will match the operating system release, and also now through OMS, Operations Management Suite. And so this is a new online service that is actually geared towards customers that want to manage from the cloud all of their on-prem capacity. And so the focus of VMM is really around two parts of the choices that customers have. It's really on the on-prem storage that is, let's say, with our partner ecosystem around SAN and NAS, and also with Microsoft software-defined storage. So SMB3, Scale-Out File Server, Spaces, Storage Spaces Direct, all of that is in the Microsoft SDS category. That's really where VMM focuses all of its management effort. There's StorSimple and Azure Storage, more part of the cloud and hybrid cloud choices or portfolio. VMM doesn't have any management in that space. All right. So, as far as you know, the virtualized environment, when it comes to VMs running on servers using storage, we really focus on four pillars of management. So I'm not going to go through each one of these, but I just want to highlight for the three main pillars. Insight is around giving customers that end-to-end visibility, that end-to-end insight from the VMs and applications all the way down to the storage. So it does require us to actually build all of that mapping inside of VMM as we discover new devices. So as a new server comes online, we discover the VMs, network ports, disks, and file shares that are associated to it. When we bring a file server under management, we'll make sure that we know all of the pool storage pools, physical disks, file shares, and an association back to the hosting clusters. So we build that end-to-end mapping in VMM. We actually use that as part of the work that we do with OM, Operations Manager for Monitoring. We discover all of the environment and then hand over to OM the file shares that need to be monitored. And then OM from there will turn on monitoring and then it can receive alerts. From a flexibility perspective, we wanted to make sure we actually covered a large set of components and devices. So we do work with SAN, NAS, and Fibre Channel Fabrics, both partner ecosystem and also first party, which is all of the Microsoft stack as well. We do all of the allocation and provisioning of storage in the context of virtualization. We are not a storage resource manager. We are not there to replace EMC or Dell SAN tools. Those will continue to coexist with VMM. All of the firmware provisioning, pool provisioning will happen from the device management tools. But once you have them in the context of virtualization, then you can use VMM and the SMIS providers to actually go and manage that. And finally, automation, again, so we have a large amount of devices that can be put under management, and then we want to make sure that we have automation for VMs, hosts, clusters, what are called services. All of that is in the context of VMM, and we make sure we do that also as part of all the self-service provisioning that goes through the Windows Azure pack, and also now integration with Azure Site Recovery for disaster recovery workflows. So what does this look like under the covers? Now, in Windows Server 2012, we released what's called the Storage Management API. This is an API surface that is released in Windows where all of the providers are plugged into. And so for the SMIS portion of this, we actually ship a storage management service. This is essentially a transcoding layer that talks SMIS or SimXML down to the provider and then plugs into SMAPI. So with Windows Server, you actually see SMAPI, commandlets, and WMI ship natively. And also this service is actually enabled natively now in starting Windows Server 2012 R2. And so there's no new code that has to be shipped in addition to this. All basically you would have to do is build your SMIS provider, and then we can start talking to that provider using Windows Server 2012 R2 and forward is when we started supporting NAS devices. For Fibre Channel Fabrics, we cheat a little bit and use what's called pass-through. So in Windows natively, you won't see a new zone commandlet. We use the sim methods and sim object model through our SimXML client and we can access the providers directly. So that's the only one right now that's left where we actually use pass-through for everything else. These are native APIs in SMAPI. Now for the Windows stack, so we're talking Scale-Out File Server, Spaces, Storage Spaces Direct, we actually ship another provider called that's part of the same framework, the Unified Spaces provider, and this allows us to access all of these three boxes right here around first-party storage. So again, that is shipped natively, so customers don't actually have to install anything. Once Windows is up and running, they can connect to a remote file server with Spaces underneath. And we also have a third-party SMP that can be generated by a provider, by a partner, and then plugged into SMAPI as well. This would require some additional software that the customer has to install somewhere, and then use that as part of SMAPI. Yes? Yes, so the question is, for a file share to appear as a managed file share in VMM, does it need an SMIS provider? And the answer is yes. That's correct. And so this API, storage management is virtual machine manager was using this API first, and now operations manager is using this for all of the lifecycle indications and alerts, which I'll cover in a few slides. So just for comparison with other products that are in the market as far as how they've abstracted their storage. Essentially, if you look at VMware and their VASA interfaces, that's essentially the transcoding layer that's equivalent to SMAPI. Partners build a VASA provider, which then actually does all of the storage device management. If you look at Cinder, Cinder has their Cinder API. You plug in a Cinder driver, and then you've got management of your storage device. In Linux, you've got a storage management as well. There's a CLI only today, a daemon that actually takes in the provider or SMIS and then gives you the storage device. So in this area, we're pretty common as to how we're abstracting it. We're really, the management clients are really dependent on these transcoding layers that allow us to flex and add more features as we move forward. And then we can allow the partners to innovate, at a different pace. So if the APIs are too advanced, and partners are still building up their provider, they can take their time, as once the provider's up and running, they can plug into SMAPI, for example. If there's new functionality that's available only in the provider but not in SMAPI, we have the flexibility of using pass-through. So it gives us, I think, both for the ecosystem and for Microsoft, it really gives the customers the best value because we can either take advantage of new features or move ahead with new features that only, let's say, a small number of partners are supporting today and then building over time. So for file storage. So any questions so far? I was just trying to give us a quick overview as to VMM and how it does management today. Okay. So the trends in the data center is around SMB3, I'm pretty sure all of you are familiar with this. And so this is really what we hear from customers as to why they're going file server and the popularity of SMB3. So we do hear a lot of deployments that are either native SMB3, using devices that have it, the SMB3 protocol natively on the controller. We also do hear a lot of deployments that are scale-up file server, a Windows server, on a iSCSI or fiber channel array. And we also obviously do hear of customers deploying natively, deploying first-party Microsoft SDS, which is, scale-out file server with a bunch of JBODs that are SAS connected. And so from an Ethernet perspective, obviously, the industry is converging on Ethernet being the fabric for the data center. We know fiber channel is still out there as well, but we do see a lot more Ethernet coming up, especially with service providers and also hyperscale clouds. QoS is also very big. So you've seen the advancements in Windows Server on quality of service. So we want to make sure we continue innovating around quality of service, not only for storage, but also for networking, and eventually how those two need to interact. And with RDMA, as far as an enhancement to the fabric, the low latency, high bandwidth is actually a huge feature, huge advancement in order for customers to get the most out of that storage environment and continue to lower the cost. Ease of deployment is also a big win for customers. They do like the ability of having an Ethernet-only environment, only working with file shares as opposed to block devices and fiber channel in the environment. Obviously, drops your total cost of ownership, and gives you very flexible topologies. And then, obviously, with SMB3, you've got a robust feature set, huge partner support, and obviously, that's why everyone here, you know, that's working with us actually, you know, helps drive that ecosystem. So, if you look at VMM and its wide range of device support, we'll start. So, with SMAPI, and this is with Threshold. So, with Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012, essentially the portfolio that we manage around NAS starts with using a SMIS provider. You can manage a NAS head that's using shared storage, or you can manage a self-contained NAS that's using local storage. These particular terms I'm using are from the SMIS spec. These are the two models that are supported. Essentially, these are just NAS devices managed under VMM using SMIS. We also, so if for partners that have block-only devices, we've also added the support so that we can now provision all block storage directly to a scale-out file server. So we can discover a block storage device, create a LUN, unmask it to a four-node scale-out file server, create a CSV, and then add a file share on top of that, and then ACL the file share to a Hyper-V server. So this is actually one of the more popular deployment models for customers. They already have block storage. They want to start testing out scale-out file server. So they join these two and then add them to VMM. So now we'll have native support for that in Virtual Machine Manager. Before, you'd have to do that all out of band and then add the complete file server to Virtual Machine Manager. And then the remaining two are all the Microsoft SDS, whether it's shared spaces or direct attached storage spaces. These are all natively under the Microsoft storage provider. So this is everything we do from a file server management perspective, all under SMAPI. So if you actually open up Windows Server, PowerShell and Windows Server 2016 today, and you type in getModule/storage, you'll be able to see all of the commandlets that are available through the storage module, which is essentially SMAPI. And that will include new file shares, new volumes, new LUNs, new storage pools. All of that will be available as part of SMAPI and can be used in the context of a scale-out file server. So for block storage, we have a similar setup. If for partners that are FiberCell and iSCSI, we essentially use the SMIS provider to manage those. For partners that have a combination FCI-SCSI, that's also supported as well through a provider, SAS SANS as well, and also fiber channel fabric switches. So we've worked with Brocade and Cisco to ensure that we can have all of the fiber channel zone provisioning both to a physical server and also to a virtual machine. Hyper-V has what's called synthetic fiber, virtual fiber channel HBA, so we can actually create new zones and activate zone sets with worldwide port names that are attached to a virtual HBA. All right, so for monitoring, for those that know how management packs work, essentially what we've always done in the past around monitoring is that we would rely on all of the logic around health state, any UI dashboard, and alerting and notifications would all be combined into a management pack. Essentially, the management pack is the schema definition, the thresholds, the logic that a customer would build or a partner would build, and then package it up into an MP and then distribute that to customers. And so a customer would install an MP and then they would be able to target a particular device and then start running discovery logic, enable monitors, and start getting some alerts. Now, all of that health logic was essentially embedded in the MP. Now, the problem with this logic is that it would require the MP developer to be very, have a lot of knowledge about the underlying device that it's managing. So if a storage partner is building an MP, obviously you know all of your storage logic, but if it's a third party building an MP, there's a lot of details that can be accidentally left out, especially if they don't know how the device really works. And so this also created another problem. Essentially, since we didn't know what to listen for from the device itself, we would essentially have to listen to everything. So as every notification would get generated, we would have to send it up, that raw data up to the MP. MP would have to reason over that and eventually decide, do I need to generate an alert or not? So we wanted to actually move away from that model because it doesn't let us scale. Actually, don't scale well once you have too much data pumping into OM. The health logic could be wrong, especially if we don't catch the data, if we don't catch the events from the storage system in time, or if we miss an actual alert. So what we've done is we've essentially are looking at leveraging the health logic that's already built into the storage systems. And instead of collecting all the raw data and then reasoning over that in the OM, we will actually ask the between the storage system and the provider to send us actionable alerts. So we've published a spec as part of SNIA that actually calls out all of the alert groups that we care about around pool provisioning, storage capacity, and other areas. I have a slide for that. And those are the actionable alerts that we want to listen for. So we'll essentially have minimal number of monitors, file share, volume, and subsystem. Those are the only three objects that we're actually listening for. The monitors are already built in natively. And so as we get alerts about a file share, that alert will actually have an indication that says what's the severity level, what are the impacted objects, what's the reason for the issue, right? So for example, if I have a failed disk in the subsystem, I will not get a flood of 100 alerts for every file share that's impacted. I will get one alert for the failed disk. In that alert, I'll get all of the affected file shares, and then I can notify the customer accordingly of, hey, these file shares are going to suffer a single point of failure, for example. But I don't have to show them 100 alerts. I'll just show them exactly what's impacted. So we're making sure that we clean all that up and also allow it so that this is now exposed through SMAPI if you want to create additional logic and listen to these alerts on your own for any other reason. Right, so now this is these actions pump out natively through SMAPI. That's exactly how we listen to them. OM subscribes to these events, and then once the monitor gets them, we'll show them via dashboarding and notifications. So essentially, that the lifecycle indications that we care about, we've already published them as part of the SMIS requirements document. That's on MSDN. These are the ones in green are the new ones that are coming up as well. And so these are both for NAS and also for replication. So as part of our DR integration with SAN vendors, SAN partners, we want to make sure we have all of the lifecycle indications so that we know when there's a state change for replication groups or for storage volumes, when replication is broken, when it is started, when it is finished, et cetera. And also the last three are around file share and local file system and any privileges that are associated with that. I'm not going to go through each one of these, but if there's any questions on on lifecycle indications? Yes. Yeah. So these indications would come through the SMIS provider, and so the SMIS provider is actually sending those alerts up to SMAPI, and then OM will actually subscribe to those events, so it'll get them in and show you in the UI. Yeah, so it is. The question was, how does System Center listen to those alerts, and how does the partner actually send them up? Yeah, so the partner would send them up from their device through an SMIS provider that's registered to SMAPI. Yeah. So for alerts, we actually publish the groups of alerts that we care about. And these are grouped in this form, obviously to make it easier to read, but also we did introduce a concept of group alerts. And so essentially what we want is that every one of these alert types, group alerts, we want to make sure that as OM is listening to these indications or these alert indications, let's say you're out of capacity. So you would essentially the device would say, I'm running low on capacity, but you're not out of capacity. And then more data gets written, and then you want to put up based on a threshold, hey, I'm actually out of capacity at this point. So we don't want to show two alerts in the same grouping around, let's say, file system running low or capacity running low. Within that group of alerts, we only want to show the most recent and most applicable alert. So if I'm out of storage, I don't want to also show I'm low on storage. So if out of storage alert comes in after low capacity, then that will replace the low capacity. So let's say then the customer gets that alert, goes and deletes some VMs or does some work, the amount of capacity drops below the threshold, another alert will come up and say, okay, I'm just low on capacity again. So we'll replace that out of capacity with low capacity. And then the customer continues to delete some VMs, maybe add some storage underneath, extends the volume, and now you're below your threshold, then we expect the provider to send a cleared event. So the customer shouldn't have to babysit OM and say, okay, oh, clear this event. Oh, clear this event. This should be an interaction between the device, the provider, and SMAPI with OM actually doing all this work together. So we introduced grouping, alert groups, as part of the 1.7 spec, specifically to address these problems that we hear with customers are on alert flooding and stale alerts in the UI. And so the idea is that you have this event chain that's handled within these groups. Each group has a clear alert, and then that's essentially how everything gets closed in the UI. We also are asking for partners to introduce a concept called diagnose, so that we can essentially figure out if we, for example, miss an indication. We know that today indications are not reliable. There might be a network hiccup. There might be, essentially the alert might not get received by SMAPI. So over time, we'll ask partners to introduce a concept of diagnose, so that every periodically we can ask the subsystem, what issues do you have right now that I need to alert the customer on? So in case I miss, let's say there was four alerts and I missed one. So as an example, this is the capacity one again. Let's assume, for example, I missed DRM-29, which it says I am out of capacity, right? The customer will only see that they're low on capacity. Obviously, the impact now is that VMs will start pausing and applications will go down, and then somebody was going to be running around trying to figure out what's going on. So we want to make sure that if the customer sees a problem that is not reflected in OM, they can still run diagnose. The system will return and say, hey, I'm actually out of capacity. They don't have to replay all the alerts. It'll be smarter than that and say, I'm out of capacity. Everything will get updated in OM, and then based on the severity of the alert, then let's say the file share will turn red. Right, and then the customer can figure out, oh, okay, I'm out of capacity in this file share. Let me go delete some VMs, turn off some VMs, and try to clean up the state. Obviously, you clean up enough state, at some point you're below the threshold, DRM-30 comes up, which essentially clears the issues, the share goes back to green, and everyone's happy. Hopefully. So, any questions on alert indications, alert groups? Okay. So let me get into the work we've done with our partners on site-to-site DR. So essentially, using all of the primitives that I showed you before on block storage management, we've essentially used all of that work around adding storage to VMM, provisioning LUNs, unmasking LUNs to a cluster. We always supported local replication, so snapshotting clones of a LUN within an array. And so what we've done as part of the R2 release, so this is in-market System Center 2012 R2, we've actually added support for creating replicas across devices. And so now with VMM and a combination of Azure Site Recovery, you can establish a site-to-site mirror, for example, between two arrays managed, let's say, by two separate VMMs, where Azure Site Recovery is actually the orchestrator that sets up the replication and also orchestrates failover and reverse replication. How many of you are familiar with ASR, Azure Site Recovery? Very few. Okay, so let me take a step back. Azure Site Recovery is a service running in Azure that is specifically geared towards orchestrating DR between two sites, disaster recovery. So as part of the disaster recovery scenario, there's three main workflows: test failover, plan failover, and unplanned failover. So from a test failover perspective, once you have the environment set up and you've got an application replicating between two sites, you want to have the ability, for example, to test if a failover will actually work. So with ASR as the witness in the cloud, that can actually orchestrate between two sites. In this case, it'll orchestrate a copy of the replica, stand it up in a isolated network. Customer can go in, administrator can go in, make sure that the application is up and running, everything fails over correctly, they can make sure that all the scripts are executed correctly. And then when they're done with the test failover workflow in the UI, they can say test failover complete. That will then delete all of the VMs on this side, and everything continues as normal. throughout that whole process, maybe the test failover took a week to test, this primary site is still replicating to the target. We never actually interrupt the primary app, or we never interrupt replication. So now that test failover is ready to go, let's assume that you have a planned event. The data center is going down, a generator is getting replaced, a battery system is going to go offline for some time, whatever the reason is. But you know it, the downtime is coming. You can then use ASR to initiate a failover on the primary site. At this point, since it's planned, it'll be a clean shutdown. We'll shut down all the VMs. We'll take the storage offline. If we're using SAN replication, we will make sure that all the storage is synced. Then we will break the mirror, reverse replication, where now the target is primary and primary becomes target, right? And essentially bring up all of the workloads on the secondary site. Now this is a real event. Now we will inject new IPs. We'll make sure that the application is up and running. The customer has scripts to make sure that it's connected to, the right load balancer, any DNS settings that have to be changed. Now the application will get redirected to the site. That is an actual failover. And then once the customer confirms that the application is properly configured on the secondary site and everything is up and running, they can use ASR to initiate reverse replication. So now that the primary site is on the target, now you can reverse replicate back to the original site, and that becomes your copy. And then customer can choose to fail back. If, let's say this is a hot standby, right, and they eventually want to move everything back, then they can fail everything over. Now, the unit of failover in this case is actually a virtual machine. So a virtual machine can have multiple LUNs. There can be many virtual machines on a LUN. There can be many virtual machines on a share. So we handle all the combination, but the idea is that you want to fail over a virtual machine. So if you have a VM on a file share with hundreds of other VMs that have nothing to do with that application, and you try to fail that over and then maybe do a file share that gets taken offline because the LUN or the volume is going to get taken offline, then all those VMs will go offline. You don't want that, right? So there's a balance that the customer has to play between isolation of the VMs for DR versus, let's say, for a particular workload, versus maybe moving over an entire lab. So let's say there's 10 LUNs or 10 file shares that all are part of the same business unit. And the SLA that the service provider or the enterprise offer to the customer is, well, we're just going to give you DR. We're not going to give you the ability to fail over a workload. Everything goes. So the SLA to the customer is that you will have a replica on the other side. At any point that we have to fail over, everything will get failed over. A more important business unit could say, no, I want my SAP system to fail over independently of an Oracle system or a SQL system. That's really up to the customer to decide. The idea here is that the combination of the storage ecosystem with System Center, Hyper-V, and ASR actually give you that full flexibility for the customer to pick and choose what type of DR they want to initiate. The last one is unplanned failover. Now an actual event has happened. The power outage in New York that happened in 2006, I forget. Nobody could see that happening. There was no time to actually do a failover in most cases. And from that perspective, this environment is either completely down, damaged, or it's been split off. So all network connectivity has been severed. There's no way of communicating to this site, either from site to site or from Azure to that site. In that case, the administrator can go into ASR and initiate a unplanned failover. In that case, we're essentially just pulling the plug. Planned failover is a graceful shutdown of all the VMs. In here, we'll essentially just say, cut the replication, fail over the LUN, bring everything up on the secondary site. But this site, in the worst case, could still be running. So we would ask the customer to guarantee that site is completely down. There's no way that the applications are up and running. If there's no way they can get into this environment, the storage devices typically safeguard primary and secondary. So once we do the flip to make this primary, data cannot flow into that LUN. Right? So we work with our partners to ensure that unplanned failover works as well. That's probably the most scary one, simply because at that point you can't always guarantee what's happening on the primary site. So the key piece I want to go over on this slide is essentially that we're using SMAPI on the VMM server side to manage all the storage. We're using SMAPI for all of the local disks as well. This is obviously a block example. We're going to enhance this over time in TP3 and Production Preview 1 to support file shares as well. So SMAPI on the host for all the iSCSI, HBA, LUN mappings, volume mappings, etc. And when we communicate to the provider on the primary site. We support two modes as far as provider interaction, fully discovered and undiscovered. In a fully discovered model, each SMAPI instance on each site knows about the other site. So SMAPI in site one is fully discovered the SMIS provider and device on site two. In an undiscovered model, you essentially have an SMAPI that only manages the storage on its side, but it does not know about the other device. In that case, the provider will have some information, some unique identifiers about the volumes and the replication groups that are available on the other side, but it actually doesn't know anything about the array. Doesn't manage the array, doesn't have any full objects about it. So those are the two models that we support, and there's partners that are pretty much equal camps on whether they're fully discovered or undiscovered model. These are essentially the partners that we went with, GA and Beta, as part of the R2 release. This is as recent as Ignite, which was in May. Any questions on DR? All right, so you guys are going to get the slides. So there's more literature and resources that you'll be able to read through if you want to know about the announcement and what we do with our partners. So then we've taken this a step further, and we actually allow customers now to also DR their workloads into Azure. Now, this is a very specific example that is actually using a storage device that's replicating from on-premises to an Equinix colo facility. Now, the reason we do that is that customers have come to us and said, listen, I would love to do DR to Azure. I don't have a secondary site, or I don't have enough capacity in my secondary site. I really want to go to Azure. I really want to DR to Azure. I'm okay with it. Problem is that my data, I've got too many regulations, I've got too many rules. I can't just put it into a blob store. I need to give my regulators an address, or I need to, you know, prove to the regulators where my data physically resides. So for that kind of scenario, we've actually worked with partners like NetApp and their solution called NPS, NetApp Private Storage. And so that essentially allows you to put a storage device in an Equinix colo facility. This is a data center that is physically or geographically really close to an Azure data center. And so you essentially have a 10 gig low latency, high bandwidth connection from Equinix to the Azure backbone. And so you can connect from your virtual machine running in Azure Compute. So from the guest, you can do an NFS, SMB3, or iSCSI connection to a storage device running in Equinix. This is the closest you're going to get a device to the Azure network. You'll never have a storage device in Azure network. So this is the closest you'll have a device that can actually be connected to a virtual machine. That is a private connection, so that it's not shared connection across many devices. This is essentially restricted to your subscription. So once you bring up your VM, you can do an iSCSI connection, for example, to that storage device. So if you take, that's from Azure. Now, what happens if you have a storage device on-prem? So now with this kind of connection and some sort of a site-to-site tunnel or an express route into Equinix, I can essentially establish replication of the data from on-prem into Equinix. I can then use ASR to fail over the VM instance from on-prem to Azure. And so using a feature in ASR called recovery plans, we can actually take and replicate the VMs from on-prem to Azure, ensure that the data is replicating from on-prem to Equinix, and as part of the failover, we'll stitch everything back up in Azure. So now the VM is, the compute's running in Azure, OS is still running on blob storage, but the data disks, the SQL disks, Oracle disks, whatever, they're all running in Equinix. So for data sovereignty, data protection, or if any, there's a particular storage performance profile you're looking for, now customers have that flexibility as well. So that's something we announced with NetApp, and so we're also always working with other partners to see how we can enable this in the future. And so with that, I've got 1 minute. It's 1:45. Are there any questions that I can help answer? All right, so I know I rushed through a lot of this content. There's sessions at Ignite and previous sessions from TechEd. Otherwise, I'll be here for another few minutes if you have any more questions in the back. Otherwise, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.